This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I'm Margaret Brennan in Washington, and this week on Face the Nation, Iran launches a massive retaliatory attack on Israel. Will it lead to a major escalation of conflict in the region? Overnight, Iran launched its first ever direct attack on Israel. Most of the hundreds of drones and missiles were shot down by Israeli defense systems and its allies, including the U.S., in a powerful show of international support. But how? And will Israel respond? And will those allies be able to keep the response in check? Declaring before the attack that whoever hurts us, we hurt him, the pressure on Prime Minister Netanyahu to not engage further and put an end to the war with Hamas grows. President Biden is also under pressure to rein in the Israeli prime minister. And back at home, politically, America's support for the Israeli side of the war with Hamas in Gaza is dropping, especially among Democrats. We'll have the latest news and tell you why what happens next is crucial to the security of the Mideast and the perception of the U.S. leadership around the world. It's all just ahead on Face the Nation. Good morning and welcome to Face the Nation. As we come on the air, we are learning that the damage from those strikes overnight has been extremely limited. And we are now waiting word or actions from the Israelis about their response. President Biden spoke last night to Prime Minister Netanyahu, and we'll hear more about that in a moment. Here in the U.S., there is increasing political pressure on President Biden on a number of fronts when it comes to doing something to end Israel's six-month-long war on Hamas in Gaza. Our new CBS News poll, taken before the Iran strikes, showed that only a third of Americans approve of President Biden's handling of the conflict. That's down 5 points since February. In fact, within his own party, more Democrats now sympathize, quote, a lot with the Palestinian people. That's a larger number than sympathize a lot with the Israelis. Our Deborah Pata reports from Tel Aviv on the attack and the aftermath.
From the north to the south, Israel's powerful air defense systems intercepted more than 300 Iranian drones and missiles with the help of the United States, Jordan, and the UK. It is the scenario everyone has feared since the October 7 Hamas attack, a state-to-state confrontation that could spiral into a regional war. Israel is Hardline Iranian supporters celebrated the strikes as the regime boasted that their Operation True Promise had exceeded their expectations, despite Israel saying it intercepted 99% of the incoming projectiles.
A number of Iranian missiles fell inside Israeli territory, causing minor damage to a military base with no casualties.
Israel is still weighing up its response, but a former senior Israeli diplomat to the U.S., Alon Pincus, told us President Biden warned Prime Minister Netanyahu last night not to retaliate.
My understanding was that Biden told Mr. Netanyahu, if you act against Iran based on this, we will not stand by you.
Pincus said Netanyahu benefits from a war with Iran, given growing anger here over his government's failure to protect Israelis from the October 7 attack.
Mr. Netanyahu wanted an escalation with Iran as early as November. For him, it was a way to change the narrative, to distance himself from October 7th by wrapping it in a bigger story, in a bigger narrative.
Just hours before the attack, tens of thousands of Israeli demonstrators took to the streets of Tel Aviv, protesting against Netanyahu's mishandling of the war in Gaza and rising tensions with Iran.
Pincus also told us Iran had deliberately telegraphed details of the strike and knew most of the missiles and drones could be shot down, allowing Iran a shock and awe spectacle with minimal damage that Israel can choose to walk away from.
That's our Deborah Pata in Israel. And we turn now to Coordinator for Strategic Communications at the White House, National Security Council, John Kirby. Good morning and welcome back.
Thank you, Margaret. Good to be with you.
Well, do you believe that Iran intended these strikes to be successful and lethal or just look like they could be?
Oh, no question. I mean, look at the size and the scale, the scope of what they fired at Israel from Iran proper. You know, more than 300 missiles and drones. They wanted to cause damage, no question about that. But they were utterly unsuccessful in doing so.
Well, Israel clearly has the military upper hand here. But the Israeli foreign minister said days ago that Israel will respond if Iran attacks from its territory. As you just said, they did exactly that. So has Israel committed to the U.S. that they will give a heads up before they take action against Iran?
I don't think I'm going to go into the details of the conversation that we had last night between the president and the prime minister. It was a good conversation, really focused on the incredible success that that Israel achieved last night with their partners. I mean, two things are clear about last night. One, Israel doesn't stand alone, and the United States stands with them as well as others. And two, the Israeli military does have superior capability to be able to defend itself. But as for what the next steps are, I think I'll leave that to the prime minister and the war cabinet to talk about.
And that war cabinet meeting is ongoing. But I ask because, as you know, the U.S. has significant presence in the region, troops in Iraq, in Syria, in Jordan.
We do indeed.
And there is risk to them.
Absolutely.
And you said, and Pentagon spokesperson said, that the U.S. was not notified in advance by Israel before they carried out the April 1st attack that started this chain of events. Should they have forewarned the United States? And as a matter of principle, what is the U.S. position on bombing what Iran says was a diplomatic facility?
I won't talk about the details of that particular strike. To the larger point, obviously, we do have a lot of troops in Iraq and Syria going after ISIS. We have a lot of facilities elsewhere in the region and ships at sea. And so what happens there certainly has an effect on us. And we do want to make sure that the conversations we want to make sure the conversations we're having with the Israelis are as contextual as possible so that we can make the necessary preparations for our own troops and facilities. The other message the president sent over the last few days, and certainly it was discussed last night, is we're going to take whatever steps we need to take to protect our troops, our ships, our facilities in the region going forward. And that was the case last night, before the strikes last night, and it's going to be the case today going forward.
Does the U.S. need to be prepared to draw down a presence from any of our diplomatic facilities Are we positioned?
That's a conversation that the President and Secretary Blinken are having literally in real time. They talked about that as well yesterday. I won't speak for Secretary Blinken and the State Department. They'll make those kinds of force protection decisions as they see the threat in the region. But the threat changes from time to time, and you're always monitoring that.
But I know you don't want to go into a phone call between leaders, but the fundamental premise of what we're talking about here is the blowback for the United States. So do you have reason to believe that Prime Minister Netanyahu shares the desire not to escalate this further, which the president has made clear is his intent?
I would say that the prime minister is well aware that the president is not looking for a conflict with Iran, that the president doesn't want the tensions to escalate anymore, and that the president is doing everything and has since the 7th of October to try to keep this from becoming a broader regional war. I mean, one of the reasons we were able to help the Israelis knock down so many of these missiles and drones is because the president made decisions in recent days to pre-position additional ships in the Eastern Mediterranean and an extra fighter squadron in the region that literally had a huge impact on last night.
To deter what could have been worse.
To prevent a greater sense of destruction inside Israel.
Would the U.S. participate in offensive action if there is an Israeli reprisal?
I'm not going to get into hypotheticals, Margaret. As I said, the president's made it clear we're not looking for a war with Iran. We're not looking for a broader regional conflict. And everything we've been doing since the 7th has been designed to prevent that outcome.
Because the IRGC chief of staff went on TV saying they sent a message to the U.S. via the Swiss embassy saying if the U.S. participates in an Israeli reprisal, U.S. bases and personnel will not be in the security zone.
Yeah, I'm mindful of the comment and the statement. Again, I'm just going to go back to what I said before. We're not looking for a war with Iran, not looking for a broader regional conflict. But the other thing the president has made clear is we will do what we have to do to help Israel defend itself. And we did last night. And we will do everything we need to do to make sure our troops, our facilities, and our ships at sea in the region are also protected. We have interest in the region, too. Now, obviously, we're all focused on Israel, and rightly so. But we have broader national security interests in the Middle East. We have a force posture that we're constantly monitoring to make sure we can meet those interests. The president takes that seriously. And that has been communicated to Iran as well.
And the Iraqi prime minister will be at the White House this week talking about
tomorrow.
That troop presence as well.
Tomorrow. Yes, we do anticipate having a good discussion about not just the force posture, but the mission set inside Iraq and what that looks like. I think you know it's an advise and assist mission.
Yes.
It's to help the Iraqi Defense Forces and their operations to go after ISIS inside Iraq.
The Mossad announced this morning that Hamas rejected this latest proposal for the release of hostages, saying it proves Yahya Sinwar, the Hamas leader in Gaza, does not want a deal. Does the U.S. share that assessment? Is the diplomacy dead, or is this just another bump in the road?
We're not considering diplomacy dead. There is a new deal on the table that Director Burns negotiated a week or so ago in Cairo. It is a good deal. It would get dozens of the most at risk, women, mm-hmm. elderly, the wounded, out, get us a 6-week ceasefire, so a little bit more calm, and get us an opportunity to get more humanitarian assistance in. Hamas leaders need to take that deal. And we're not considering this dead at this point.
So that Mossad rejection is not closing
the
door.
We're not considering it a dead letter.
Okay. Last Sunday, when you were here, you told us that the U.S. expected to have talks with Israel, perhaps as soon as this week, about their plans to go into southern Gaza, into Rafah. When is that happening? Do we have any further details?
We think that discussion, first of all, there's been some staff technical level talks, even since you and I last spoke. We expect that larger conversation with our Israeli counterparts to happen in coming days, hopefully this week.
Hopefully this week. John Kirby, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, we turn now to the Republican chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Texas Congressman Michael McCaul. Welcome back to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me, Margaret.
We just heard from Mr. Kirby about the conversations in regard to U.S. personnel in the region. In your role, you have oversight of the State Department and some of these embassies. Yeah. How concerned are you about the security threats to Americans abroad? And is the U.S. prepared to do an evacuation if needed?
You know, we're always concerned. We don't want escalation in the region. That would be a threat to our troops and our embassies. As I understand, talking to the State Department, the embassy is in good shape right now in Israel. Yeah, and I think the fact of the matter is, as Mr. Kirby mentioned, is 99% of these rockets and drones were shot down.
Right.
Pretty impressive display of force, showing of force in collaboration with the United States, Jordan, and other allies. And it also showed us Iran's not 10 feet tall.
Mm-hmm. not 10 feet tall militarily. Fair assessment there. So I'm sure then you don't agree with some of your Republican colleagues who are saying that this necessitates any kind of military action against Iran?
Well, I do think that this is a choice for Israel. We cannot have daylight between us. We had some daylight prior to this when we were joined with them. And I know Gantz came out with a statement saying we want to be joined with our regional partners.
One of the war cabinet members, yes, who is more centrist than Prime Minister Netanyahu.
I think a proportionate response here. I think one option would be to take out the facilities where these drones and rockets came from, and also destroy the manufacturing facilities that build the drones and rockets, not just for Israel's sake, but also for Ukraine's sake, because these rockets and these drones are being bought by Russia and they're killing Ukrainians every day. What happened in Israel last night happens in Ukraine every night.
And Ukraine's ambassador to the United States, Oksana Makarova, was tweeting about that point. She called it an axis of evil between Russia, Iran, and North Korea. But the Speaker of the House doesn't seem to share, and we've talked about this before, the sense of emergency that you have. Why is there still not a date for a vote on Ukraine? I did see the statement from Steve Scalise, the whip, saying that there should be a consideration of legislation to support Israel. But what does that mean? Is that a vote in the National Security Supplemental?
That is a speaker determination. I'll be speaking, talking to him this evening with other national security people and chairs. I think it's, I talked to the ambassador, our ambassador to Ukraine as well. She said the situation is dire. You know, Kharkiv could implode any day now. That's 2 million people. And the power grid is under threat right now. If the power grid goes out in Ukraine altogether, we don't have time on our side here, Margaret. We have to get this done. I would implore, what I need to educate my colleagues, they're all tied together.
Yes.
I mean, Iran is selling this stuff to Russia. Guess who's buying Iran's energy? China. And you know why? Because we lifted or waived the sanctions that we had, this administration, on the drones and the missiles and on the energy. This is giving them $100 billion in cash to fund their terror operations. And that's why we're seeing this.
Okay, but you still don't have a commitment from the Republican Speaker of the House to vote on what you say is a Republican priority. That has to drive you mad here. Do you expect to get an answer when you talk to the Speaker tonight?
I have a commitment that it will come to the floor. My preference is
when?
This week.
Your preference, but still an open question. I mean, the Speaker of the House went down to Mar-a-Lago this week, stood beside Donald Trump, and we have not heard the Republican frontrunner in any way endorse the package that you were saying there are Republican votes to pass.
He did say he supports this idea of a loan program. 80% of the funding goes into...
But that's not in the National Security Supplemental.
That would be added in our bill, right? As in addition, repo, my statute, to get into the Russian sovereign assets to help pay for this. Mm-hmm. You know, in addition, $80 billion of this money, 80%, I should say, of the Ukraine funding goes into our defense industrial base,
right,
to replenish and modernize our stockpile in the United States. These are all compelling arguments that the Senate bill doesn't have. And so I, an eternal optimist, I'm doing my part. I look, we didn't pick and choose our enemies in World War II. We went after all of them, Japan, Italy, and Germany. We can't just pick, you know, and say Iran's bad, but Russia's okay, and China's bad.
I mean, can't do standalone.
They're all in this together, and it's very clear to those of us in the intelligence national security community.
You said something interesting here. You said you have to educate your colleagues. Our polling shows that among Republicans, the most trusted source of information on Ukraine and Russia is Donald Trump. 79%, Congressman. 60% trust the Pentagon. Conservative media is 56%, which is separated from actual journalists in war zones, which is 33%, the State Department 27%. How do you fight that information war when the Republican frontrunner for the presidential nomination is helping to spread some of that disinformation?
Well, I think that's precisely why the speaker went down to Milagro to talk to him about the Ukraine package, to get him to agree that, you know, this loan program for direct government assistance like the EU does would be acceptable. Remember the first lethal aid package that ever went to Ukraine that I signed off on, $300 million, what came from the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. They don't want to see us lose in Ukraine like we did in Afghanistan. the repercussions long term, a weaker America, not stronger. I don't think Trump wants to own that. I think he wants to help us get to the point where he gets in and he can finish the job.
But that doesn't that graphic tell us that in order for any bill to pass, you need Donald Trump to endorse it, even though he's not even in office?
I'll be honest with you, Margaret. He has tremendous influence over my conference. And that's why it's important that we have these discussions with him. But we also, we're all independent thinkers. We represent our own districts. I happen to think that we haven't seen a threat like this since my dad's war of World War II. And if we don't stick together against these, this unholy alliance that came after Afghanistan, remember Afghanistan was the turning point. And that is when the Russian Federation came into Ukraine. Chairman Xi is looking at Taiwan. Ayatollah rearing his ugly head.
Well, they first invaded in 2014, but...
Correct.
Yes. I take your point. Congressman, we'll see if that phone call changes minds or if the meeting in Mar-a-Lago did.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We'll follow this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Face the Nation will be back in 1 minute. Stay with us. We're joined now by Arizona Democratic Senator Mark Kelly. Welcome back to Face the Nation, Senator.
Thank you for having me on, Margaret.
I know you are on the Intelligence Committee. You track a lot of national security issues. The U.S. intelligence assessment back in February that was declassified said Iran is, quote, not currently undertaking the key nuclear weapons development activities necessary to produce a testable nuclear device. Are you concerned that some of these calls for strikes on Iran by Israel or for even U.S. participation in them, could that change Iran's calculus?
Well, I think it could, and that's why we don't want to see this escalate. You know, last night we supported Israel in their defense very successfully. This is a very aggressive act by Iran. They've been, you know, doing this for months now through their proxies, but now directly from Iranian territory, so this is significant. We don't want to see this escalate into a wider conflict. At the same time, I am constantly looking at the Iranian nuclear weapon capability. They could get pretty close pretty fast if they chose to do that.
But they have not, as yet, decided to make that political decision.
That is our intelligence community's analysis of this.
Okay.
And I would agree with that.
Okay. In a poll that was taken before this Iranian reprisal, Democrats' support for sending weapons to Israel has dropped from almost half to a third since October 7th, according to our latest poll that we released today. Democrats are now more sympathetic to Palestinians than to Israelis. Are you concerned that Israel's conduct in this war in Gaza and the use of U.S. military equipment is going to hurt President Biden in November?
Well, my first concern here is the Israeli people and the Palestinian people. I mean, Israel was violently attacked on October 7th. I've watched an hour of footage from that day. It was horrific, and Israel has a right to defend itself. The way this has been conducted in Gaza, I have serious concerns. I've expressed those just most recently, about a week ago, with the Israeli prime minister about what happened with the World Central Kitchen. Reckless act and irresponsible, and they need to do better. We provide them with significant aid, and we're going to need to provide them with more, by the way, here, because of what happened last night. We're going to need to replenish their rounds. Yeah, I mean, I'm always, you know, I'm concerned with perceptions and an election. But the thing that's always top of mind for me, because I sit on the Intelligence Committee, I'm on the Armed Services Committee, it's our own national security and the national security of our allies.
Mm-hmm. And Senator, I know you've been concerned about the security of Ukraine as well, and that national security supplemental. I want to talk to you more in depth about that and what's happening in your home state in a moment, but I'm going to have to take a commercial break here, so stay with us. And we hope that all of you will stay with us as we talk as well about the Arizona Supreme Court decision last week that shook.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The political world. Stay with us. For the first time in American history, a former president will stand trial in a criminal case beginning tomorrow. Former President Trump is accused of falsifying business records in a hush money scheme to cover up an alleged affair with adult film star Stormy Daniels. At a campaign rally last night in Pennsylvania, Trump alleged that the trials were part of a Democrat-led effort to keep him from running and winning the election.
This is what you call a communist show trial. And we're going communist, don't kid yourself. We don't win this election, this country is finished.
We'll be right back with a lot more Face the Nation and more from Senator Kelly, as well as analysis on the Iranian attack, plus an interview with the head of the International Monetary Fund, Kristalina Georgieva. That's in our next half hour, so don't go away.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome back to Face the Nation. We are continuing our conversation now with Senator Mark Kelly. Senator, before we leave national security space, I want to ask you about some U.S. intelligence information declassified and shared with reporters this week at the White House that China's surging equipment to Russia for its war with Ukraine, helping Moscow fill gaps in its production cycle, including helping to produce drones and artillery. Why is China using this moment to help Russia with its war in Ukraine?
Well, I think they realize that Russia, the outcome of this war, Russia against Ukraine, is critical for their own decisions with Taiwan and the Western Pacific. This is all connected. Iran, Ukraine, China. The stock of Ukrainian ammunition is dwindling. They're going to run out of ammunition. Russia's capacity, we look at this all the time, is going up with the help of China. Russia can win this. If we support Ukraine, Ukraine can win. We passed an emergency supplemental 2 months ago. It's sitting on the speaker's desk. He should bring that to the floor tomorrow night, get it passed. This is also going to help Israel. We could replenish the stocks that they used last night.
I take your point, Senator, on them all being connected. I want to ask you about what's happening in your home state of Arizona. As you know, the state court ruled an 1864 Civil War era law can take effect that would criminalize abortion. It's on hold at the moment, but this is a live issue. Do you have confidence that your state legislators will take action before it goes into effect?
Well, let me start by saying this has been a disaster for women in Arizona. They've lost a fundamental right to abortion, and it's all because of Donald Trump. And our legislature, yeah, they tried to fix this a couple days ago. That did not work. We've got to get, we've got a ballot initiative in November to fix this. Donald Trump owns this. He said just yesterday that he broke Roe v. Wade. And because he did that, this enabled our court to bring back this draconian 1864 law to take away this right, send doctors to jail.
I mean, to be fair, your Republican state legislators have some agency here, too. They could have done something different. But I take your
They did not do
exactly
anything about it. They had the opportunity.
But there is that initiative you just mentioned to put on the ballot in November, a chance for your state to vote on this particular issue. And it would guarantee abortion access up to viability, which is anywhere between 21 and 24 weeks, typically, of pregnancy. From a political position, how much is this going to help offset some of the disappointment and exhaustion we're seeing in polling from Democratic voters? Will this issue drive up turnout in a way that benefits the president in your state?
Well, my first concern is women in Arizona and their health. And women could die from this 1864 ruling that once again was enabled by the former president. So that's my biggest concern. We're going to have an election in November. I imagine we're going to have large turnout because of this issue. I also want to point out, Margaret, that I don't think this represents who we are in the state of Arizona. This is a moment in time. We're going to get through this. We have an opportunity to fix this in November.
Well, we will be watching to see what happens, Senator. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Margaret.
Today. And we're going to go now to the former commander for U.S. Central Command, General Frank McKenzie, who is also the author of a new book, The Melting Point, available in June. General, welcome back to Face the Nation. Given what you just saw play out in the last 24 hours, I wonder if you think that deterrence has been reestablished. And on the spectrum of options that Iran had before it, how big did it go last night?
Well, first of all, good to see you, Margaret. I think this was a big attack by Iran. I think this was as close to a maximum effort as they could generate, and I'll illustrate it in this way. Iran has over 3,000 missiles of various types scattered around the country. They have about 100, probably a little more than that, missiles largely in western Iran that can target Israel. Based on what the Israelis are saying, I believe they fired most of those weapons at Israel. The Israelis obviously were able to intercept most of them. Iran could not replicate last night's attack tonight if they had to. Now, they also use cruise missiles and they use drones to try to present a multi-dimensional problem to the Israelis. It was a maximum effort. Now, the Iranians are going to backtrack and talk about moderation. There was nothing moderate about this attack, and I think John Kirby nailed it precisely when he was talking to you earlier about the nature and scope of the Iranian attack. It was indiscriminate, and it was designed to cause casualties, so we should just consider that as we take a look at it. Now, has deterrence been reset? I think the Israelis performed magnificently with our assistance and the assistance of other nations in the region, including the United Kingdom. And so I think that now the Iranians have to sit back and consider what they considered their most important capability. Their ballistic missiles, their drones, and their cruise missiles have now been employed in a major combat test, and frankly, that test has failed. So I think Israel this morning is now much stronger than they were yesterday, and Iran is relatively weaker than it was yesterday.
But now it comes down to political decisions that Israel's leadership will be making. And as you heard John Kirby say, those decisions haven't been made yet on what a reprisal will look like by Israel. Would you advise, if you were in your former role, Israeli leaders to pull back here? How concerned are you about a regional escalation?
So I think one of the opportunities for the victor in a major battle that was just fought that Israel won is the opportunity to use restraint. And I would counsel restraint. There will be voices that will urge the Israelis to take out the Iranian nuclear program, which I think is a false chimera anyway. But I would argue that if you're going to do something, and they may have to do something, I would be precise. I would be short. The fact of the matter is Israel can name the price they want to exact. The wide gap between Iranian zealotry and enthusiasm and Israeli competence has now been laid bare for all to see. So the Israelis will be able to do what they want. But sometimes when you're in that position, showing some restraint is the best strategic option that you can take.
Chairman McCaul was here and he said, we see now Iran is not 10 feet tall. It sounds like you're saying Israel can shrug this off.
I don't think Israel can shrug it off because I think Israel still needs to be concerned about Lebanese Hezbollah up north in Lebanon. They do have the ability to hurt Israel if they come into the fight. Interesting, last night there were some tactical back and forth in the northern border, but nothing like the volume of fires that LH, Lebanese Hezbollah, could have generated had they wanted to come into the fight. The fact that they did not choose to do so is, I think, very, very important. It's a very important thing to note because they know and understand what Israel can do to them. I've never viewed the Iranians as being 10 foot tall. I don't think the Israelis have either. I have a healthy respect for at least their enthusiasm and their willingness to undertake things that we saw last night. But now the Iranians have got to sit back and, although they'll never say it publicly, they're going to have to examine, re-examine some of the very basic concepts of the way they've constructed their military.
And Lebanese Hezbollah has been has not entered this conflict to date in a substantial way. I know you've been warning for a while. That's the player to watch. You were directly involved in the taking out of IRGC Commander Qasem Soleimani during the Trump administration, and then Iran's retaliation at that time was also viewed as fairly restrained. How concerned should the United States be, though, now in this moment about U.S. personnel and U.S. troop presence in places like Iraq and Syria? As you know, this is a live issue at the White House this week as the Iraqi prime minister visits.
Our forces distributed across Iraq and Syria, supporting the armed forces of Iraq and anti-ISIS operations and supporting our SDF partners in eastern Syria, those forces are vulnerable to an Iranian or an Iranian proxy attack. We recognize that. I think that's why the president's been very forceful in warning them. Now, it's also very instructive that the Iranians did not choose to attack us as they conducted a major strategic attack on Israel. So they've listened to that. The Iranians know that we have the capability, if they choose to fight us, to hurt them very badly. And I think that the Iranians will think long and hard before undertaking attacks against us in the future.
If Israel were to respond, would you have suggested targets? What would you expect?
Well, the Israelis have a lot to choose from, both inside Iran and outside Iran. My only strategic advice would be, you want to be narrow. You want to make sure that it's a it has a definable beginning and a definable end, and the Iranians know when it's over. But the fact of the matter is, Israel can name its price right now, and that's a very heady position to be in. But it's also a position that calls for exercise of strategic restraint and a view to the long term. And Israel has an opportunity here, I think, to demonstrate that and to seize the diplomatic initiative, really, in an arena where they struggled to do it over the past few months.
We will see if they make that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That political decision. General, thank you very much for your analysis. We're joined now by CBS News national security contributor Samantha Vinograd, formerly the Assistant Secretary of Counterterrorism at Homeland Security, and she served on the National Security Council in the Obama administration. Great to have you back, Sam.
Good to see you.
So we're talking about decisions that have to be made at the top of the Israeli government right now. The United States and Israel are still lockstep on defense matters, but we know there's this rift in terms of the choices the prime minister has been making lately. There are sources that I speak to within the Biden administration who are concerned about the decision-making Netanyahu is taking on, and sources in the region who say there's a political benefit to war. Did Iran just throw Benjamin Netanyahu a lifeline at a time he's politically embattled at home?
Well, I think that when we take a step back and look at how Israel views the threat of Iran, this is an existential threat to the state of Israel, and we cannot forget that. That said, having worked closely with the government of Israel while at the White House, it is true that Benjamin Netanyahu, for a long time, has been staking his political dominance on existential threats to Israel and needing to remain in power. So I do think that the attack against Israel last night will give Benjamin Netanyahu more to hold on to. It is also true, Margaret, that in a moment of such uncertainty for the state of Israel, political paralysis that would arise from early elections, which Netanyahu's largest rival, Benny Gantz, called for, that early elections would create a state of political uncertainty at a time when all resources from Benjamin Netanyahu on down do need to be focused on countering Iran.
Gantz has said those would be in September, so early, but not in the middle of the war, essentially. But we'll see what happens and how many wars exist potentially, right, in the coming months. This is so on edge. I know that in our own polling, we see that half of this country believes the threat of terrorism will increase, not just for Israel, but also for the U.S. because of this ongoing Israeli war with Hamas in Gaza. The FBI director testified this week, saying the number of investigations have escalated since October 7th. These are self-radicalized people. How should Americans at home understand this threat domestically?
Well, let's keep in mind, what happens overseas often doesn't stay overseas. From a counterterrorism perspective, I was in the room after October 7th. I can tell you that the administration has been deeply focused on really ensuring two things. One, that foreign terrorists don't seek to travel to the homeland to inflict damage here. But more importantly, we know, factually speaking, that terrorist groups in Iran, who's the largest state sponsor of terror in the world, uses these kinds of high-profile events like what we saw last night as mass marketing opportunities. Iran's attack against Israel is a mass marketing opportunity from Iran and its proxies to try to radicalize supporters. We know that terrorist organizations have been using the Israel-Hamas conflict to try to inspire supporters and operatives all around the world to act, primarily against places of worship, entities believed to be associated with the state of Israel. And that's why I don't believe that there's a Homeland Security nexus to what unfolded last night in the homeland at this time, based on the sources that I've been speaking with. However, out of an abundance of caution, The federal government, state and local partners are taking every step possible to ensure that nothing reverberates here. We saw the Homeland Security Advisor in the meeting with the president, Secretary Blinken, Secretary Austin, and others last night. We have seen the New York Police Department, LA Police Department, and others indicate that they are increasing patrols around places of worship. And what we need right now is for law enforcement and intelligence partners to remain vigilant and for members of the community to speak up if they see anything suspicious, because the biggest international terrorism threat facing the homeland right now is individuals inspired by what they're seeing overseas to action.
And we know, I mean, the director of national intelligence has testified that the Israeli war in Gaza will have a generational impact, potentially on terrorism. And we're seeing in our polling support for Israel's war there dropping. How concerned are your former colleagues that Israel is losing strategically the fight and becoming more isolated?
From a counterterrorism perspective, it is a fact that what is happening in Gaza is being used again as a mass marketing opportunity, not only because the suffering is incredibly difficult for anyone to watch. Hamas and other Iranian proxies are using those images to try to rally support against Israel, whether it be here in the homeland or more broadly across the world. I think the biggest concern right now is ensuring that Israel has what it needs to deter Iran, not just today, but going forward. And so when we think about what Israel's next move is going to be, we also have to think about what the international community is going to do to ensure that Iran loses the funding for its ballistic and cruise missile program and takes a step back from funding terrorism around the world.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
World.
We'll see what that international response is at the UN and elsewhere. Sam, thank you very much for your analysis. We'll be back in a moment. We're back with the Managing Director of the International Monetary Fund, Kristalina Georgieva. I got it right this time. I apologize.
You beat me, beat.
Okay. Oil markets have been swinging because of this instability in the Middle East, escalation risk, the threat to global shipping as well. Can you gauge at this point what the economic impact will be?
So far, it has been somewhat moderate. We have seen on Friday, when the news of potential strike from Iran into Israel came, oil prices jumped by 1%. Mm-hmm. We have seen so far the impact of this conflict primarily in the epicenter, affecting Israel and in particular devastating Gaza and West Bank, with spillovers to the neighboring countries. Even the shipping destruction in the Red Sea has not yet led to a major impact. But any impact, as small as it might be, is not desirable in an economy with high uncertainty and inflation still not being brought down to target. Very simple. Oil prices go up, inflation goes up. So what can be done to bring down uncertainty is, of course, for others, for those in politics, in the military. From an economic standpoint, the more we reduce uncertainty, the better.
We have a lot of uncertainty right now, one of them being the U.S. Congress and funding for these conflicts. Congress is looking at authorizing the Biden administration to seize Russian state assets potentially for use in a negotiation or to rebuild Ukraine. What do you think of that idea?
This is really for the jurisdictions that have authority to take a decision to make.
But it could what have we global
do,
impact.
What we do is we look at it and then we assess what the impact might be.
Right.
And then, of course, it is a matter of how would that be received as news across the world, countries that are holding their reserves. And let's remember today there are $11 trillion in reserves in countries around the world. They would be looking at that with some attention. So what our position is, when a decision is being taken, whatever the decision is, please think of the consequences, and especially the law of unintended consequences, and factor it in.
What you're saying there is that this could essentially cause what? A flight of assets out of the banking systems in Europe in particular?
We have not seen the reaction to be of that magnitude. Mm-hmm. Our point is very simple. We have an integrated global economy. Even with the winds of fragmentation, still countries are connected with each other. So whatever decision is being taken, take it with an eye of the desired impact and also of what might be an intended consequence.
We're in an election year, as you know. Goldman Sachs put out a report outlining potential tariff increases as the most important issue for the economic outlook if President Trump were to be reelected. He continues to float ideas of tariffs anywhere from 10 to 60% or upwards. How would you gauge the impact and the risk of doing that?
Let me first reflect on why we have seen over the last decade a backlash on globalization. We all know an integrated world economy lifts up growth prospects and leads to improvements in standard of living, but not for everyone. What we have seen is that communities that have been negatively impacted by globalization and have not been attended, they have not been helped to cope with it, are the backbone of this backlash that we are seeing today. So my most important point is trade is good, but it is not necessarily good for everyone. And policies have to reflect on that. We have to make sure that the benefits are more broadly shared in society.
Tariffs would add to inflation as well. You agree, as an economist?
Of course, tariffs. Let me just be very clear. The reason we are proponents of an integrated world economy is because it brings costs down and it increases the well-being of people around the world. So we are on the view that we should be striving to have a more integrated economy. And let me say this, what we're seeing is already trade patterns are shifting.
Right.
What is the impact? The impact is the so-called connector countries play a bigger role. So you don't see a trade from A to B, you see trade going A to B to C to D. So we are lengthening the supply chains, and that of course leads to a high cost on consumers, and as you said, not great for inflation.
Well, you have a lot of work ahead of you in this second term. You were just reelected to. Congratulations on
thank
that.
You.
And thank you, you for joining us. We will be right back. That's going to be it for us today. Thank you all for watching. Until next week. For Face the Nation, I'm Margaret Brennan. Today's guests were National Security Council spokesman John Kirby, House Foreign Affairs Committee Chair Republican Mike McCaul, Arizona Democratic Senator Mark Kelly, former commander of U.S. troops in the Middle East, retired General Frank McKenzie, CBS News National Security Contributor Samantha Vinograd, and the Director of the International Monetary Fund, Kristalina Georgieva. The executive producer of Face the Nation is Mary Hager. This broadcast was directed by Shelley Schwartz. Face the Nation originates in CBS News in Washington. For more Face the Nation, we're online at facethenation.com, and you can follow Face the Nation and CBS Radio News on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Face the Nation is also rebroadcast on our CBS News streaming network on Sundays at 1:30, 4, 10 p.m. Eastern, and again at 4 a.m. the next morning. And it's available through our apps, CBS News and Paramount Plus.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, don't tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
54, so it's too late to start saving for retirement, right?
Not right. Starting to save, even in your 50s, can really make a difference.
Right now, saving seems hard to wrap my head around.
AARP makes it easy. Go to aceyourretirement.org and chat with Avo, the friendly digital retirement coach. It's free and only takes 3 minutes.
I like 3 minutes.
Answer some questions and get personalized tips to help boost your retirement savings.
Thanks.
Just head to aceyourretirement.org. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary and it's not boring. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and maybe more importantly, on your life. I'm going to be your financial coach, someone who brings common sense and an insider's perspective on how to manage your money and your emotions. And I promise we are going to have a little bit of fun along the way. Have a question from retirement to career changes to college funding? Just send us an email at askjill@jillonmoney.com. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
It was the biggest scandal in pop music. The stars of Milli Vanilli, the Grammy-winning multi-platinum R&B phenomenon, were exposed as frauds, but none of this was their idea. So whose idea was it? Enter German music producer Frank Farian. He saw the success of acts like Michael Jackson and Prince, and he wanted in, no matter the cost. So he devised the perfect pop heist. Two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? They couldn't sing. But Frank knew just how to fix that. Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies and takes a never-before-heard look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when the truth came out, Rob and Fab were the only ones who got burned. Looking back now, it's hard not to wonder, why did everyone blame them and not the man pulling the strings? Follow Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
The Hargan women seem to have it all.
From the outside looking in, we were blessed. My mom
was amazing.
But as detectives would soon learn, there was a lot going on inside the Hargan household.
Ashley and I have been calling my mom and the house and Helen. Okay. No one's answering.
63-year-old Pamela Hargan gunned down in her own home. Her youngest daughter, Helen, lay dead upstairs.
Patrol, when they arrived, assumed or thought that there might have been a murder-suicide.
But for the detectives on the scene,
there were things about the scene itself that were concerning to us on day one.
Who would want to kill their mother and their little sister?
There is no boogeyman here. It is exactly who we think it is.
I'm Peter Van Sant from 48 Hours. This is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings, early and ad-free on the 48 Hours Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts.